It's time for the Access of Easy podcast, the weekly technology digest that keeps you ahead of the curve. Brought to you by EasyDNS.com.
Welcome back, everybody, to the Access of Easy podcast. My name is Joey. That's Len. This is number 406. Len, what's going on? Happy Thursday, I guess. Kind of rainy here in Southern Ontario, but it feels good to be in summertime officially.
So 406 episodes, that is more than Don Cherry's podcast, which just ended. It did its last episode this past week, and it was something like 300 and change podcasts were done. So Access of Easy has a longer lifespan than Don Cherry's podcast. Imagine that.
Did you realize he was already like 92 years old?
Have you heard him in the past?
I haven't. But everyone says in the stories about the sign-off that he's like pretty shaky in his voice, right?
It's not only that, his train of thought, you have to have, and his son does it with him, and he keeps him on the topic. And without his son there, it would just be awful to listen to Don Cherry. And it's sad because just, you know, 10, 15 years ago, he was with it, right? He was sharp mentally. Yeah. Now it's just, you know, Father Time takes his toll. He's in his 90s, as you said. And who knows how many concussions he took through his career.
Yeah.
And all this, it adds up. And here he is now.
You know, there will be a question at some point, probably not yet, but about whether or not Don Cherry was ahead of his time with his controversial comments. I see today's stories about, you know, the rise of quote unquote hate for South Asians in Canada. I don't really think that's a fair characterization of what Canadians feel. And Don Cherry, for all the things that you might disagree with, I think espoused what is now a popular sentiment, unfortunately.
He was definitely ahead of his time, and he was expelled before he should have been.
Yeah.
Remember the time in which he said that?
Yeah. 2019, just before things started to roll downhill. But anyway, we'll get started here. The main headline today, Chinese state hackers exploit unpatched Cisco flaw to breach Canadian telecom network. If you are as excited about that as I am, stay tuned, okay? Last week's quote, in Mexico, an air conditioner is called a politician because it makes a lot of noise, but doesn't work very well. That was by Len Dayton. No one got it. This week's quote, if voting changed anything, they'd make it illegal. Did you submit that quote? If you know who it was by, put it in the comments and we'll make sure that you get your next round of renewals on EasyDNS. Remember that you're only allowed to look at the stickers in your local covered bus shelter for the answer. You can't Google or look it up online. And then when you get it, put it in
the comments. What about cereal boxes? Can I check it from there? Is that a legitimate source of information for me to...
You could do that, yeah. And if your cereal box comes with a game, you're also allowed to install the game CD-ROM and check those holy texts as well.
I'm going to go buy some Captain Crunch right after this to beef up not only the answer to that question, but also a free game out of it. It's a bonus.
Isn't there a real correlation between the quality of life in Canada and when we stopped being able to get Roller Coaster Tycoon in boxes of Nestle Nesquik cereal? I think there is.
I honestly don't even remember when we had a time where that was included in anything. I remember used to come in magazines, you know, like when you get like the PC computer or whatever the heck of it, PC magazine. There's always a disc in there. You get shareware and stuff like that. That I remember back in the 90s. That was pretty cool.
Yeah. Okay, where do you want to start? We got five stories here. I'm warning you now, listener viewer, I'm testing a new wireless mic that has a fresh software update. I think it sounds good, and I want it to sound good for you, but just be advised that it might sound a little different than normal. So where do you want to start? Canadian Telecom and Headliner?
Let's do the Sonoco, because that's what came out, and I did it in order as it was given to me yesterday, so I'm with that order. And so we have a malicious campaign that's very recent, in fact. And it's involving a Trojanized version of Sonic Wall's SSL. So Sonic Wall, what the heck is it? Their NetExtender is a client-side software application that enables remote users to establish a secure SSL VPN connection to an organization's internal network. So that way you could communicate with it externally, share information, files, all this through an encrypted tunnel. So you think that this thing would be safe, right? Well, these Strut actors were very good because they created a deceptive modified version of the legitimate installer. And it was designed to closely resemble the official software. So people were out there, they just installed it. And sure enough, it aimed to steal the VPN credentials, including the usernames, the passwords, domain information, and quite a bit of more over there from unsuspecting users over there. And they were able to distribute this. How, Joey, like, it's always the same old crap. It's fake websites, right? Like, there should be a way to find a way to correct if your website's being spoofed, right? Maybe EasyDNS might have an option to protect you from that. Either way, so through these impersonation of official websites, people were downloading this fake impersonating software, and it was counterfeit. There was even a digital certificate that was included in it, and it was still fake. Everything was just not correct. And well, unfortunately, people got pwned as a result. And I tried to see if this was a publicly traded company, SonicWall, but I couldn't find it. Maybe I don't know, maybe I'm wrong, but I wanted to see if they took it on a chin. But you know what? Anything to do with a VPN, like, I use one, and I'll be perfectly honest, I wholly trust it. Mm-hmm. Everything, I almost use it exclusively on my computer and my phone. And so anything that's being done, it's being tunneled through there as a way for me to kind of, you know, say, cover my track, so to speak. So nobody knows what I'm doing. I prefer to have that sort of covering my tracks. But still, in the end, I have to trust that VPN provider. And this one, this is pretty bad. Granted, it wasn't the company themselves that did anything that's wrong.
Right. Yeah.
But still, the fact that somebody can make a competing software that looks just like the real McCoy and trick people to installing it and use that, pretty crap. Again, there must be some piece of service out there that could prevent people from getting spoofed. I don't know what it could be. Well, any idea?
Listen,
you EasyDNS. I'm looking at you.
The funniest thing about this is that we go through these stories, and there's lots of creative ways to engineer a fake piece of software, a fake website, all these things. But at the end of the day, Len, what does it come down to? People clicking a link that's not legitimate, right? It's another SEO poisoning style of attack. And this is, it's par for the course on this show. Fun fact, did you know that in 2005, a bunch of Sony BMG CDs, so like music CDs, had similar sort of Trojanized backdoor software put on? So when you put the CD into your computer, for example, it phoned home and gave data to. So how about that? So this place, I don't want to say that's a legitimate use, but it's not just threat actors in the most literal sense doing this stuff. It's also, or was also at that time, I don't know who buys CDs anymore, the music industry. And there's other examples of that too, if you look at sort of what these attacks have looked like in the past. All in all, to your point, trust no one. You, of all people, I'm surprised. You're saying, like, I trust my VPN. I think a lot of people probably do. I don't know how you avoid this. You can't double check, triple check every piece of software you have all the time. You have to be aware when you're downloading. That's the key sort of, inflection point.
And when I downloaded the software, I actually, the signature, I verified it to be legitimate. And that's how I downloaded it. So it wasn't, I clicked on simply a link from a website. I made sure that the digital fingerprint matched. So that's generally the best way to do things. It's a little bit harder to do, but it's still, in the end, though, the software itself has to be legitimate. And they themselves, the people hosting the VPN service, they have to be good actors. So that's why I'm saying there's some sort of trust there. Like, I'm trusting them not to hand over everything to an authority or just record it and hand it over. Not that I'm doing anything wrong. It just, whatever. It is what it is.
Of course not. Yeah.
Anthropic. Anthropic. These guys, there was a recent federal court ruling. It's kind of a strange decision in a copyright lawsuit against this AI company, Anthropic. And this could potentially set precedent for the AI industry moving forward. And the judge, this guy was a San Francisco judge, he sided for the most part with Anthropic regarding their fair use of copyrighted material for AI training. And this is really cool because he says that he concluded that the process of AI training models on millions of books is quintessentially transformative. And he said that it's the existing work. It was learning through it, not replicating it. So it was going through all this information, kind of like a human writer. It draws information from various text sources. And that's what it's saying how this AI was doing it. It wasn't simply copying it. It was just using it as a way to create new stuff as an inspiration kind of thing. And so he basically cited on them saying this was fair use and could be used under U.S. copyright law. But he also threw a curveball at Anthropic. And while he said that the training process itself was deemed to be fair use, he says that the company still might have to face a trial over the acquisition and storage of the millions of pirated books from the online shadow libraries, such as Library Genesis Book 3 and Pirate Library Mirror. One of the three I'm familiar with. The other two I'm not.
LibGen is like huge.
That's the one I am familiar with. The other two I was not aware of until I came across this, which is interesting. So I'm adding this to my sources here. Anyways, they were able to build a central library and of data, and he said there is no entitlement to the use of pirated copies for the central library. And all this, there could be potentially $150,000 per infringed work. That could be the charge here. And it's pretty nasty if it goes down, and this has to be decided later on. So this whole court case is interesting. There was two sides to it in terms of, well, how the justice is going to be ruling. One, how it was done, how it learned is deemed to be fair use. But the second one, housing all that pirated stuff makes sense, right? They didn't have any claim to that. It was done through malicious means. You're using these pirated websites to get those books and to use that to help train their model, to help train their AI. I could see that being wrong. Like if they did it the right way, great. But you know what? They need a library card, so to speak. That's, you know, is that possible? I don't know if AI could get it, but you know, it needs the first library card to be issued to an AI, and then it could be done legally. But until then, I don't know what else I could do.
Okay, so a couple things on this. You tell me if I'm off base on anything. From the side of Anthropic, I totally agree that this is no different than inspiration. And so the same way that you or I could look at an author, read an author, and try and copy the style or take inspiration from the style in our own, you know, novella or other piece of writing and then sell that piece, it's impossible to prosecute that. You know, the number of people, for example, who try to write in the same style as Dan Brown, the Da Vinci Code guy, there's an infinite number of Dan Brown slop clones. And Dan Brown, by the way, I don't think is a great author either, but he's easy to read and it's the books are fun to read and, you know, et cetera, et cetera. That's what sells. I don't think it's fair to classify that as illegal. And so I'm glad to see the courts didn't do that. The more interesting piece to me is from the side of the publisher. My wife's a big LibGen user. My wife reads a ton of books. She has a Kobo or whatever the Amazon e-reader is and is on LibGen all the time. Her and all her friends are on LibGen constantly, among other sites. These are the databases. If I look backwards 15 years, let's say, 20 years even, this is awfully familiar to me, given that the music industry had a similar problem with pirating. And they tried to go down a number of different roads, right? They tried the iTunes. Well, first they tried the DRM route, right? No more burning CDs. You can't burn a CD when you put it in your computer. The audio files scramble or don't complete the rip or whatever. Like, you know, Windows Media Player and Winamp and that jukebox app, I forget the name of it. It was hard to get those files onto your computer. That didn't work. People found ways around that. Then they tried, you know, going after the Napsters and Kazaa's and Morpheus's of the time. That didn't work either. It's ultimately a problem with scale trying to do that. You know, you're playing whack-a-mole and code now and apps now are much easier. So that's not really an option. So what do you do? Well, what they decided to do after a few iterations was go the Spotify route, where Spotify licenses the songs. Or the songs are licensed to Spotify at some per play cost. And people listen to them on their phone, store them, quote unquote, in the app, but never actually have access to the files. And so those files can't be trained on or downloaded or shared or otherwise, you know, illicitly or illegally distributed without actually owning the audio. And the audio is just not available anymore. It's hard to get MP3s of stuff now, you know, short of going back to Pirate Bay and the like. I don't see how book publishers don't go this direction too soon, not only because of the AI training thing, but also just because LibGen is taking so much money from them. You know, so many people are using these products like Kobos and other e-readers and saying, look, I'm not going to buy the book unless I really like it. And even then I may not buy it because the book is $40. But if Kobo went the way of Spotify and said, we're going to give you access to every single book, it's going to cost you $10 a month, but the books are staying server side. I think that's the model you're going to see. And I'm not a big fan of that, obviously. I'm sure you're not either. You know, it's the own nothing and be happy. Not quite the deluxe version, but rather the light version. But I think that's the way it has to go. These AI training models are not going to stop. There's more and more of them. They're scouring all the time. And, you know, the idea that you're going to get 150,000 per title is like laughable. So what do? You prevent it. And I think you prevent it by keeping stuff server side, the way that Spotify has and the way that other providers also do. Don't forget, you know, it's not just books and things like this. I know we're talking about AI and language model training here specifically, but it's worth mentioning that piracy and theft of IP in, you know, in one way or another has been a problem for a long time. How many times have we talked on this show sort of about stuff that's adjacent to the Adobe model, where now everything is downloaded and done in the cloud, or, you know, done locally, but has to call home to finish a process and make sure that the product's bought and paid for, blah, blah, blah. Everyone knows the story. Books are going to go the same way. And I think everything that's touched by AI may eventually go this way. So I'm looking forward to seeing how this plays out, but it's happening pretty fast, way faster than I would have guessed a few years ago.
Well, don't they right now, you're familiar with Audible?
Yeah.
I think they kind of have that now where you could just simply sign up for a monthly or year.
Do you know who has Audible baked into their app right now?
Wouldn't have a clue.
Spotify.
Okay.
So like they're going this direction. It's the e-readers that are becoming problematic. Because you can download, you know, whatever file format that is. Maybe it's PDF or something else. I don't know what format it is. And just throw it on your e-reader for free.
Pub or whatever. But yeah. our local libraries here, mm-hmm. if you sign up and you could download a book and it only stays on the app for a period of time, then it gets...
Yeah, it's server side. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's they are kind of doing that. I mean, at least on the public library level here. I'm not sure how it's done in other municipalities. If they have,
I don't know. Are they going to start putting ads in the books? You know, like at the end of every chapter, there's a 30-second video or a 2-page flip through ad or something. Like there's all kinds of ways to make this work. The question is, you know, how far can you push the users before they decide to just go paperback? And by the way, paperback, you know, for the user base to decide to go paperback, that's the best outcome for the publisher. There's no doubt about that. So that's the other thing, right? People are not going to stop reading. What they will do is go back to the medium that's the most convenient. And it's rare that you see that in these types of markets, right? I'm never going to go backwards to CDs. I'll just find another digital medium, right? If Spotify goes sideways, there's a million other digital mediums. But if my e-reader stops working and I want to read, you know, I'm not going to sit in front of my computer and read or my laptop and read. I'm going back to books. It's kind of a weird market and a weird dynamic between the product and the consumer. So I'm interested in seeing how this one plays out. It's kind of a fun story, one that I don't usually care this much about the AI stories, but I can kind of see that it's in my wife's habits, right? And so it's interesting to me to think about how she would react to some of this stuff down the road.
If I give you a CD, how could you use it? Is it one of your gaming systems? Is that the only way you could use it?
I have an amp and a CD player, and I will never get rid of them. Yep.
I can't say I have that.
You should have one. Everyone should have one.
I have a USB CD, DVD.
Like a drive? Yeah.
Yeah. That hooks up to USB. So I could play DVDs or CDs. To be honest, I haven't turned that on in years. So I'm not even sure if it still works anymore, but I do have that. And I ended up getting that through a friend. So I was happy to pick that up. Anyways. This is an interesting one. The Salt Typhoon story, the state-sponsored threat actor. And I can't believe this is the case because they believe, let's say, Salt Typhoon, they believe to have links to the Chinese government. That's the thought here. And it looks like they have exploited a Cisco vulnerability. And with that, they were able to breach a Canadian telecoms provider. And this happened back in February this year. Which company is it, though? We don't know, right? They say they took advantage of a flaw that was patched in Cisco months prior. So like this patch came out, but still they were taking advantage of it. And it wasn't just Canadian authorities that were impacted, but also it looks like even potentially U.S. companies might have been impacted as well. But either way, the FBI is on this. CSE, the Communications Security Establishment, is on it. That's Canada's side. And they're issuing warnings about these malicious activities. And so what they did, they were able to, well, breach the networks, three different network devices, they say. And they were able to successfully retrieve configuration files, and they were able to modify the configuration file, something called a generic routing encapsulation. Never heard of this, GRE tunnel. And this enabled them to capture, this is the worst part, they captured network traffic and potentially captured huge amounts of data. So if you're using your phone, for instance, it could potentially have been captured by those people out there. Why don't we know more about this? They haven't disclosed which companies. It could be the company that you use. It could be the company that I use. Which company is it? We don't know. But either way, this is crazy. Salt Typhoon, they've been going at this for a while. They've been going after companies, U.S., South Africa, Italy. And their MO is to go after, in the past, they would compromise edge network devices as a foothold for long-term access. And these guys, they know their business. And now we have 5G coming into Canada, right? And who's the ones that's installing 5G? Is Huawei, have they been banned from doing that? I don't know. But they have strong ties to China. So moving forward, it looks like this is going to be a great honeypot for somebody to tap into and get information. I don't know. Use your cell phone wisely moving forward.
The problem is this was patched 16 months ago. And
still,
like, that's the big problem. And it's not, by the way, it's not like we're not talking about some fly-by-night company like we usually do on this show. We're talking about, is the stock publicly traded? Are they weighed down? Who's fired? Credit monitoring, blah, blah, blah.
Well, we'll get to the credit monitoring later in the show. Don't worry.
I know, but like, this one is Cisco. Cisco. They're a giant. They are everywhere.
There's going to be issues in any software, regardless if it's from a giant or from a small single coder. There's always going to be a way, and these programs, these systems, they're very complex. So when they're rolled out, they don't have every attack vector covered. And as they're discovered, then they're patched and so forth. So it's hard to blame Cisco for doing this, just because of the complexity of everything. And, you know, and they have a foothold in so much between transferring network data from place to place. Mm-hmm. So,
you know, my guess is on the affected telecom that it was.
I'm seeing Rogers.
I think it was all three.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Yeah. I bet it was all three.
That means it's everybody.
Yeah.
Because all the little guys, they kind of roll up to them too, right?
That's right. And in the story here, there's comments about in 23, I think, 23 or 24. Verizon and AT&T got hit. So it's not like this sort of thing doesn't scale. And if you're going to try and do it all at once, you would try, I think, to do the whole Robellus suite of customers of services and get everything at once before it was patched in a responsible way. I guess responsible is probably too soft a term, but how often are we going to see stories like this, you think, going forward? You know, everyone's data is on their phone. It's on their, like, the phone is the easiest thing to get a hold of, you know, like everyone is just so carefree with the phone all the time. And like, you know, whether it's, I'll give you an example. I was somewhere last night and a friend of mine who was also there asked me for the Wi-Fi password at this place. And I was not on the Wi-Fi. I never go on the Wi-Fi there. And I was surprised and, you know, kind of thinking about it later, like, I wouldn't be joining public Wi-Fi all the time, you know, like Wi-Fi that I wasn't sure about. I'd much rather have the carrier deal with the traffic than hop on someone's router that I didn't install, that I don't know about. Like when I think about my own home security, my network security, like I am always looking for suspicious stuff on my network, always. And I barely know what I'm doing, but there's a couple easy things you can do at like the router level to see if anything's going on, right? Checking connections and stuff like that is so easy, but I'm not sure everyone does that. certainly not in areas where there's tons of possible connections, it's high density, whatever. You gotta be careful, man. And you know, stuff like this is just another reminder that even if you leave it to your carriers, they gotta have the same level of paranoia that you do, or else you're cooked as well. There's no helping you. You're toast.
You know what? I would love to see if any of these companies were able to capture President Trump's cell phone, like the data that comes out of that.
It's just memes. He's just sending memes. He's texting tweets to someone else and memes to someone else. And
not just that, especially the past week or so, the communication between him and Israeli authorities. I would just love to be a fly on the wall just to hear what's been discussed over there. Like publicly, we know what's been said, but privately, it's got to be just incredible stuff to digest.
Oh, yeah, I think so too.
It's too bad we're never going to be privy to that. We could dream. We could dream. All right. Let's talk about this Senate bill. And it's a proposed bill. It's the Children and Teens Online Privacy Protection Act.
Just cut this now, okay? Tomas, when you're editing this episode, okay, just paste in the story from last week. It's basically the same thing. The week before that, same thing. Different jurisdiction, different name, same garbage. Every week it's the same.
It's very, very similar, right?
These people want to spy on you so goddamn badly, and they will do anything they can to make that a reality. And you're seeing this everywhere all at once now. It's insane.
And so this new COPPA, COPPA 2.0 bill, the goal is to expand the privacy protection for minors. The original COPPA bill that was back in 1998, it was focused on children under 13 years old. And the 2.0 version of COPPA, they want to extend that and expand it to individuals up to 16 year old. And it's requiring consent for data collection when they're between 13 and 16, and parental consent for those under 13. Also included is targeted advertising, that they want to stop that to minors, and strict requirements for how online platforms handle personal information. So in order to do all this, though, there has to be an age verification system. And that way, it's going to be a place where they store all this information. And we've discussed already just hacks and attacks in this video. We've just discussed a few of them. Imagine if you have the government that has access to this, and I don't know how much faith people have in them storing information properly. But with respect to the COPPA 2.0, they say that the objective here is to ensure that websites, apps, even IoT devices, they got to implement these age verifications for all
years. They got to have an age verification on my fridge. But they need it. They need an age verification on my DVD player, my TV, my headphones, my controllers. It's everywhere. They're never going to stop.
And this is to avoid liability, right? And so they're going to get government ID that's going to be stored somewhere, biometric data potentially. Where are they going to use? Where are they going to store this? How it's going to be used? It's another vulnerability that could be out there, and you know, I don't have much faith in them reliably storing my information anybody's information and preserving it in a way that they're going to respect our privacy. I don't see this, but either way, it looks like that this is going to come out for real. The FTC, they're going to be ruling on this very soon.
You can follow they're going to rule. I mean, everyone knows how they're going to rule. You got RFK talking about everyone in America needs to be using a wearable for their fitness. They want to put an age verification on my fridge. You know, is maybe when I open the fridge, RFK gets on there and says, the cookies are no good for you. Turn the cookies away or whatever. You know, these guys want to cop a look at my data is what they want. Okay. That's what the name comes from. And, you know, to reclaim the net's credit, they have a little write-up that you can go to if you're a member about the push for these things everywhere. Digital ID, online age verification, blah, blah, blah. It's here, it's there, it's everywhere. It's just coming from all directions. You know, in Canada, we just passed that border bill where now, like, you know, as if it wasn't enough that I can't, you know, say certain things on Twitter. Now you can open my mail if you don't like what I'm saying. And private conversation is the end goal here. They want to know who's saying what, when, and to whom they are saying it. And there's no doubt about that. The stuff like Keat and other extreme privacy SMS / text platforms that charge a penny every 10 messages or whatever. These things are going to be so important in the next little while. You're going to see. I'm just waiting then for like a big watershed story where somebody who's got a name in tech or a name in finance or a name in business gets netted by one of these things. And the public agrees with what he says, even though the authorities do not, I don't know how this is going to play out short term, but I can just already see, they're going to get somebody who's got a big enough name and enough firepower to say, I'm not going down without a fight.
Well,
and John people McAfee finally wake up to this stuff. Yeah. And McAfee's a good one. Yeah. John McAfee.
So what happened to him?
I mean, he allegedly killed himself, right? Yeah. He's got a great video of him on a boat with a giant guy behind him with a machine gun. There might actually be two giant guys behind him with machine guns and a woman at a kitchen table. And he's talking about how to make the perfect breakfast cocktail. And it's one of the most deranged 5-minute videos I've ever seen, but it's so funny. Like it's him basically just mixing tons of different liquor and he puts like a little bit of blue. I forget what that.
Is he wearing like a tie in that with no shirt?
Maybe he might be. I don't know, but I recommend people find that video if they haven't. It's pretty funny. But yeah, that's a good example. A guy who gets wrapped up in this kind of stuff, and that's another guy who's right. He was right. The encroachment, all happening so fast, and meanwhile, people are just like, the wrong guy won the mayoral race in NYC. Like that's the least of your problems, People who are like going around buying blue light filtering glasses, trust me, guys, the blue light is not going to be the problem in the next few years. Okay. It's way down the list. Lots of other stuff happening. You should be actively thinking about ways to.
Yeah. Put on sunscreen too. That's another thing.
Yeah.
Lots and lots of sunscreen.
This is a sunscreen tinfoil podcast now.
I don't think this decade, and I can't remember the last decade, if I ever used sunscreen. I just never use it.
I burn. I don't know what people think about this. Like when I go to the cottage, I'm out there on the dock all day. Like I burn. I need to put on something. Otherwise, I'm just going to cook.
You just take a little bit of burning the next two or three times.
It's not a little bit. It's a lot. It's a lot of burning. Like it's like, I can't even walk outside for 2 days. It's so uncomfortable. I can't sleep. Maybe I could try it. Maybe I'm eating too many seed oils. I don't know. I gotta talk to some kind of carnivore doctor about this. I'm sure you can sort me out.
Gotta go to a Mediterranean diet.
Yeah. All right. I'm eating nothing but olive oil and roast beef for 3 months.
It's insurance provider Aflac. That's a pretty big one.
Aflac.
Yeah.
The note distortions. Yeah.
Pretty big in the U.S. They disclosed that there was a recent cyber attack, a cyber incident that took place, potential theft of customers' personal data. And this happened in earlier this month, in June 12th. And there was some suspicious activity going on their network. They claimed they work very fast to contain a break-in within a few hours. And they also confirmed that the business operations remain unaffected. And so they'll continue doing underwriting of policies, reviewing of claims, crap like that. Your data may be gone, but their ability to do business, it remains intact. So good for them. They do say that all this was done through social engineering tactics. And they say that the compromise likely contained sensitive information for what was stolen, including claim information, health information, social security numbers, and other personal information. With respect to customers, think about what a insurance company would have on file for you. And if they get access to that, it's pretty damning stuff. On the plus side, they're going to be offering some credit monitoring services up to 24 months and also identity theft protection and stuff like that. So they went the extra mile here. They did set up a dedicated call center for.
Oh, nice.
We're going to give them credit. So they did something.
Now you can get a quick conversation with Navdeep about your stolen identity. That's good. I look forward to that. That sounds like that's worth the trouble. Yeah.
Not only do you call it something. Why wait? We have this extra product here for $19.95 a month. Can we cover for the next time you get hacked? So
it's
Scattered Spider is
good name. I like it. I'm glad you brought this up. I'm giving that a 3.7.
Did we talk? I could swear this name is very familiar to me. Like,
it's not, because it's not like a, it's just a loose group. It's not like a, you know, actual like team or whatever. It's just like a bunch of people, it sounds like, who kind of work together sometimes and maybe do other stuff other times. I don't know. I'm not familiar with the dynamics of hacker groups, but it doesn't sound like these guys are that committed to the cause.
They're elite. Anyways, these guys, they said, or at least people talking about them, they say that they're very good at the social engineering schemes. They've been doing at this stuff for quite some time. And yeah, so unfortunately, if you are a customer of Affleck, well, who knows what's going to happen. Luckily, you're going to get that creditor monitoring service, so you'll be able to verify your information for the next 2 months. Oh, sorry, 2 years or so. So it sucks. What could you do? Again, like, these companies, they exist. And a lot of times we have to use, especially in the United States, where healthcare, for example, it's not publicly funded. It's not paid for by everybody. It's done individually or maybe by the employer level. So you're almost forced to buy into these health insurance just because you don't know what's going to happen in the future. So you got to give them all the information, what you have, your height, your weight, everything to do with your health. They have this information and they got to do something. They got to do better at protecting it, because every time this stuff gets leaked, 24 months of credit monitoring services, what the heck is it going to do in the end? Like, I don't know. I just throw up my hands. This is just pathetic.
I want to give credit to Aflac, because I just did a quick look here. They don't outsource any of their customer service stuff. So good. You won't have that problem if you call the dedicated line, I suppose. How do you fix this, Len? You know, you can't, because the incentive and the sort of financial incentive specifically don't make sense. Doesn't make sense to fix it. You pay basically nothing out of pocket for the breach, but you would pay significantly more out of pocket for more competent people instead of people who could be socially engineered by, you know, some guy they'd never met before, never spoken to on the phone before, et cetera, et cetera. So naturally, you're never going to get this fixed. And, Len, I don't want them to fix it, because we do this show every week. And if they start fixing it, we're not going to have anything to talk about besides Don Cherry. And we already exhausted that topic. So, you know, just enjoy your credit monitoring and your identity theft protection, and have a nice week, I guess. I don't know. Like, what else is there to say about this? This just keeps happening. It's bad that it's insurance, because insurance has a lot of info, obviously, on you, including some of the, you know, sort of like tendencies, maybe. I don't know what data, you know, exactly was stolen here. I am always skeptical of the official release, but I'd be pissed if this was me, honestly. I don't know how mad, but I think pissed is about where I would land.
And that's it, Joey. That's another week in the books.
That's it. Yeah. That's it. That was the latest and greatest in data breaching and overreaching. Hopefully the mic sounded okay. I'm going to, 37 minutes. That's pretty good. Listen, we got lots to say. I'm about to go build a Blackstone in my garage while my daughter bounces around in her little bouncy command center.
What's a Blackstone?
It's a big, 3 foot, 36 inch like griddle, cast iron griddle.
Oh.
Gonna be good, I think. Anyway, I don't know. I kind of, to be honest with you, it was a bit of an impulse buy a few weeks ago. I haven't had time to put it together. So
could you put the Brontosaurus burgers on there?
Oh, for sure. For sure. Yeah. Do you remember, I don't know if there's any people who listen to this from Hamilton, Ontario, but people should look into this place that used to serve the Pugger Burger called O'Neill's. The Pugger Burger was the best hamburger I've ever had. And the place is closed now, unfortunately, but it was so good the couple of times that I had it. And I wish they were still around, because I would definitely go get one tonight. I'm in the mood for a burger, actually. So a little Hamilton trivia for you there. Anyway, that's it. So yeah, take care of yourselves. We'll see you next week, and don't do anything that we wouldn't do in the meantime.
Take care.